Hey everyone, welcome into the Pipeline Podcast. Tim McMaster here along with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. The 2016 Arizona Fall League season is in the books, guys. Mesa beating Surprise 6-1 in the championship game on Saturday. We are going to pretty much just cover the Fall League in this podcast since it's over and there's plenty to talk about there. As far as that championship game goes, Ian Happ, really the big star, the Cubs prospect, four hits in the game as they pile up the six runs and win it, does Mesa. Jim, I'll start with you. You were there for that championship game. Anything else stand out to you from that game?
Yeah, I mean, Happ was the obvious one. I mean, it was interesting because on paper it looked like Mesa should win fairly easily because they were going to begin the game with two pitchers who had no-hit Surprise a couple weeks earlier, and they had a deep lineup, and Surprise was kind of out of pitchers using a reliever on the mound, and it lived up to that. I mean, Happ was the obvious guy. I thought the other guy two other guys who really jumped out for me were, one, Brian Anderson, who had a very nice regular season there and helped his prospect status, hit five home runs after hitting just, I think, 11 during the regular season in the minors. You know, just got a high fastball from Eric Stout of the Royals and just crushed it well over the fence in left field. So he kind of continued the positive vibes he generated during the regular season in the Fall League. And then I think I saw Frankie Montas pitch for the Athletics about four times in Arizona, and he was the second pitcher who helped combine on that no-hitter. He followed Dylan Covey. And Montas came in, and it was just lights out like I had seen him every time. I mean, he was consistently, you know, working three-inning stints as he came back from some rib injuries. And every time I saw him, he was upper 90s and topped 100 and upper 80s and touched 90 with the slider. And, I mean, he was really impressive, too. He struck out, I want to say, five and three innings. Three strikeouts came on sliders. And Nick Gordon, who is a pretty polished player for his age and you know, obviously grew up around the game, almost fell over trying to hit a 99-mile-an-hour fastball in on his hands for Montas. So Montas was dominant. We didn't rank him as a top pitching prospect in the league, but, man, every time I saw him, he looked very, very good.
It's interesting to me that there is a championship game, I guess, to the AFL, but you're playing competition, so why not? But, Jonathan, at the end of the day, these are players from different organizations kind of coming together in groups to form these AFL teams. When it gets to the end of the end of the season, they've played together for a month or over a month. Is there kind of a camaraderie by that point from what you've seen over the years?
Oh, I think absolutely. It's obviously, this isn't the be-all end-all in terms of vying for a championship. Not having gone through a full season and things of that nature, they're not even playing every day. But listen, these guys are competitive and they want to win. And you can see in that championship game that there's the desire to come out on top. They get rings for it, and you talk to any professional player. Especially if they've been around a little while, any chance you have to play for a ring is a good thing, and it definitely shows. You know, they understand that it's within the within the confines of what the Fall League is like, but I can guarantee you that Mesa was very excited to have walked away with the title.
All right, you guys both have great articles up on MLBpipeline.com right now. Jim has an article, Top 25 Prospects of the Fall League. And then, Jonathan, you have Top 10 Breakout Prospects from the Fall League, which is a little different because I think it's more guys that aren't necessarily top prospects but did a great job in the Fall League to kind of raise their stock. You have eight position players, two pitchers on your list. Is there one guy from that list that really stands out position-wise as a guy who boosted up the stock a lot?
I liked putting together this list. It's the second year I've done that. And you know what? I think if I were going to pick one guy, I think I'd have to go with Jared Miller, lefty from the Diamondbacks, because I think he probably raised his profile more than anybody else. Big 6'7" lefty, fastball, sort of slider-cutter combination, and was ridiculous. I mean, 18 and a third shutout inning, six hits, four walks, and 30 strikeouts. Just snuck him onto the he wasn't even on the D-backs top 30. He is now. We needed a replacement. He's likely going to move up when we re-rank. Now, he's a reliever only, but he certainly looked like a guy who could pitch high leverage innings late in games. People wanted to sort of compare him to Andrew Miller, which is obviously not fair. But in the pond that is the Arizona Fall League, the comp worked. He was the Andrew Miller of the ASL.
And I was actually wrong. You actually have three pitchers on the list.
Yep.
Miller, along with Edgar Santana of the Pirates and Austin Gomber of the Cardinals. The other guys, position players, Greg Allen of the Indians, Brian Anderson of the Marlins, Yu Cheng Chang, shortstop for the Indians, Ramon Laureano of the Astros, Andrew Stevenson of the Nationals, then Zach Vinci, who we had on the podcast a week ago of the Reds, finally Eric Wood of the Pirates. How about a position guy, Jim? You've seen this list of Jonathan's. Overall, I guess my question is, do you agree with all these guys, and is there a position guy that stood out to you on there?
Yeah, no, I mean, I thought it was a good list. I think all these guys did really help their profiles. None of them were really anywhere close to making the top 100 prospects list, which we highlight at our site, and a lot of them weren't ranked very high, or some of them not at all on the team top 30 list. I mean, the guys, position players, and there are a number of them who stand out on here. I think the one who maybe came up the most when I was working on my prospect list is a guy who kind of flies under the radar a little bit but is pretty talented would be the Indian shortstop, Yu Cheng Chang. He can do a little bit of everything. You know, it feels like I kept saying this about Nick Gordon, that Nick Gordon lacks a standout tool, but yet he does a little bit of everything, and I think he's going to be a pretty good big league shortstop. And I kind of feel the same way about Yu Cheng Chang. I don't think there's a plus tool there, but, I mean, he might be average or better across the board, even power-wise. I mean, he had 51 extra base hits during the regular season. He's a pretty solid shortstop, not a gold glover. And talking about guys breaking out, I mean, good for Chang because he needs to get noticed. I mean, he's in an organization where Francisco Lindor's his shortstop, and I think Eric Gonzalez is a guy who's ready to play in the big leagues as everybody's shortstop. So he's got some massive roadblocks ahead of him. But, based on the reviews I got from him or about him out in Arizona, a lot of teams noticed him. So it wouldn't surprise me if we see the Indians make another significant trade, if somebody tries to go out and get a Chang, maybe Eric Gonzalez too. But he was really a guy who was not on my radar, and I saw him and I said, that's an everyday player in the big leagues at some point.
Jonathan, you mentioned that Miller had moved into the D-backs top 30, and before long you guys are going to be working on the new top 30s for all the teams, re-ranking things before we get ready for the 2017 season. How much do you guys put into – I know a lot of that is just talking to scouts and getting feedback, but how much do you put into the Arizona Fall League performances when you guys are starting to rank these guys again heading into the next season?
Yeah, I think you have to be careful with that because it's a small sample size. The league historically has been a really good hitters league, so numbers can be a little bit skewed offensively quite often. So, I don't think you want to overdo it, but I think certain performances, are going to stand out and enable you to move a guy up the list. It's not like Jared Miller's suddenly going to be the Diamondbacks' number three prospect after not being in the top 30 based on the fall league he had. But he was so dominant, and I think in his case, it's the fact that it's in a hitter's league and he was so dominant is a good sign. So it definitely is taken into consideration. You obviously want to see what they do after, whether it was just a one-and-done kind of thing or it's just actually something clicking. He was a guy who had been a starter who still learning how to relieve. So, I'm of the belief that for him anyway, it's really starting to click. And, I think I'll move him up a relatively weak systems list accordingly.
Jim.
And I was just going to follow up on that, Tim, and say I don't think it's so much the performance that you necessarily notice on some of the guys. It's how they did it. Like, for instance, and we'll talk more about Gleyber Torres. Like, Gleyber Torres is another guy who will move up closer to the top 100 prospects. And as good as he was, and he was really, really good, it wasn't like you know, those of us who cover prospects for a living, Jonathan, you know, I think you'd agree with this too. We're like, oh man, I'm shocked that Gleyber Torres is hitting line drives and driving the ball. Yeah, you know, I mean, we knew he could do that. I think with a guy like Jared Miller, he's the guy you notice more, because, you know, especially a relief pitcher, just when you saw the stuff, a mid-90s fastball and a mid-80s cutter slider with very high spin rates, and you see how nobody can touch him. You know, it wasn't so much just the stats as it was that you saw he had two really good pitches. So I think that matters more, you know, what you might see a guy do or how he does it than the actual numbers he puts up.
A nice transition. Gleyber Torres takes us into the top 25 prospects of the Fall League, according to Jim Callis. And Jim, Yoan Moncada, we thought was going to be a big part of this Fall League season, but he got injured early on and didn't play enough to qualify for this list. So we're not going to go through the whole top 25. People can go to MLBpipeline.com and check that out. Obviously, great players on this list. Some guys that we've already talked about here in the podcast, Nick Gordon, Ian Happ, some other guys as you go down the list. But number one on the list is Gleyber Torres. You just talked a little bit about him. Youngest batting champion. He hit .403. MVP of the league, so really a no-brainer that he would be number one, age just 19. Jonathan, we just heard Jim talk a little bit about Torres. What stood out the most to you of what he was able to do in Arizona?
Oh, man. It could be a long list, but, you know, I think the thing that stood out the most to me is how he carried himself. He looked like he belonged, not just there, but, you know, as a big leaguer in the, you know, not too distant future. He certainly, obviously wasn't overwhelmed based on how he performed, but, you know, he was playing second base for the first time, really handled it fine. And this is a young man who, my first day in the Fall League seeing them, he came over and introduced himself to me. He's working on his English. He is the complete package. To me, it was that confidence without being overly cocky, passion for the game without it, you know, without him getting out of control. And I think all of that is going to serve him extremely well. And I'm not even talking about the physical tools or what he did, in the games. That was just sort of, to me, how he carried himself.
He's got to be on a fast track of sorts, right, Jim, at this point at 19? I mean, there's no rush, certainly, to the Yankees. They're okay in the middle infield, right now with Castro and Gregorius. But the way this guy is hit, you got to just let him go where he can go at this point, right?
Yeah, no, I think when you have special players, and I think Gleyber Torres is a special player, they set their own timetable. I mean, they're not trying to rush him. You know, he's still going to get to the big leagues, you know, at a very early age because he won't even turn 20 until December. I mean, I think realistically, I mean, he's going to go to Double-A next year. If he, you know, if Gleyber Torres, you know, continues to perform like he can, and it seems like each year, one of the things that really sticks out for me is that the scouting reports on him seem to get better. Like the Cubs knew they could hit when they knew he could hit when they signed him. I think the power is better than people thought it would be. I think the shortstop defense is better than people thought it would be. His hands are just so quick at the plate and in the field that he can just do a lot of things. But I think if he goes to Double-A next year at age 20 and has a really good year, I think we might see him in the big leagues next year, depending on what the Yankees situation is. If they're contending and let's say Gregorius or Castro is hurt or not performing well, or let's say they need a third baseman and maybe they put Castro over there to put Torres in the lineup, you know, I think that will dictate it. If the Yankees are let's say, you know, out of the wild card race, then I think you let him, even if he's tearing Double-A up, stay in the minors. And I just want to say, too, you brought up a question. I had somebody ask me this, where you brought up Moncada, and I had people ask me, well, if Moncada had qualified for the list, if he had played in more than six games, who would you have ranked as the number one prospect in the league? Because Moncada is number one on our MLB pipeline list. And I saw Moncada play two games. So I didn't get to see him play as much as I saw Torres. And I think you could really go either way on that. I mean, I think, and Jonathan can follow up when I'm done with this, but when we do our top 100 list, I think Gleyber Torres is going to rank in the top five or six prospects in baseball. And you know, you could maybe even argue top three. But with him versus Moncada, I think for ceiling, Makata's got a higher ceiling because, you know, we keep coming back to the Robinson Cano with more speed comparisons, and I do think those are fair. I do think Makata's looked like that. But Torres has got a pretty good ceiling, and I think he's got a higher floor. I think he's a better hitter than Makata. I think he's a safer bet to hit. He's got more defensive value because he can play shortstop. He's not as strong and as fast as Makata. Although, I mean, they might put up similar home run numbers because, like I said, I think Torres is a better hitter, and he might, you know, get more out of the power than Makata does. But it would have been an interesting question had I had both of them to rank. And Jonathan, what say you? Where do you think Gleyber Torres gets ranks in our next top 100 that comes out in January? Because I get asked that question a lot.
Yeah, no, we've been getting it. And, without having really looked at it too carefully, and I think I, you know, answered it in inbox. I think I said top five, without really lining them up just yet. It just based on what we saw, and I like what Jim said too in terms of that his scouting reports keep getting better, and he's always been so far ahead of the curve age-wise that. It's scary to think that, you know, how much more there might be in there in terms of the offensive potential. I don't want to go beyond top five because I don't want to look at it a little more closely. But, you know, if you told me that Moncada would be one and Torres would be two, I could certainly believe it.
So no real doubt about the number one spot in this list with Gleyber Torres. How about two and three? Because you have another couple position players there, Jim. Cody Bellinger, number two. Eloy Jimenez of the Cubs, number three. Imagine if Torres was still a Cub and you look at this list. But when you looked at those two, are they pretty close?
Yeah, they were very close. I mean, to me, they were kind of the obvious second and third guy, whatever order you're going to put them in. I mean, if you wanted to argue Michael Kopech, because Michael Kopech looked pretty good, and I'm sure we'll touch on him in a moment, you can maybe argue him in there. But I thought it was Bellinger, Jimenez. And what was interesting to me was talking to scouts, and everybody liked Eloy. They did. That wasn't the question. But he was not as – you know, I kept getting a couple comments that, you know, the lower half was thicker than people thought. The run times to first were below average, that he wasn't quite as athletic as people thought. And even though it seems odd to say, I mean, Cody Bellinger, his primary position, his first base, is faster and more athletic than Eloy Jimenez. I think they have similar power ceilings. They're both very advanced, you know, power hitters for their age. What I like about Bellinger is that when he kind of made the transition from more of a pure hitter to a power hitter in 2015, his strikeout rate went way up. And this year he brought it back down again without losing the power and increasing his patience. And the nice thing with him, too, is even though, again, it seems odd to say that this first base, that he's athletic and his primary position is first base, but it's true. I mean, I've had guys put a 70 on the 2080 scouting scale on his defense at first base, and he played a lot of center in the fall league. I think at the major league level, that's more of a fill-in type of deal. But he can play the corners in the big leagues, and he's going to have to because Adrian Gonzalez is still under contract for two more years, and I suspect we'll see Cody Bellinger in Los Angeles at some point during the middle of the season.
If he doesn't get traded, because we've heard those rumors as well as far as the Dodgers go, but right now, as far as now staying put with Cody Bellinger in Los Angeles. Jonathan, how about you and your thoughts on those guys? Similar?
You know, I kind of was trying to get myself all fired up to make some sort of impassioned Eloy Jimenez should be number two. but that all made sense. You know, when I first gave Jim feedback for the list, I think I said I'd probably put Jimenez ahead of Bellinger. I also saw Jimenez more, and I saw him early. I don't think he could go wrong, really, as a 2-3. That's, you know, pretty close. But I'm totally fine with it. And Bellinger is sort of an unusual guy in that regard just because of the athleticism at a position where you don't normally see it. And, you know, he swung the bat well, too. I think we're going to be hearing a lot from both of them. In the future, we'll be hearing more, you know, from Bellinger earlier than, you know, we'll see how long it takes Jimenez to make the climb, you know, that he's gotten through that first full season.
All right, and then let's talk some pitching a little bit. Jim, you threw out Michael Kopech's name. You have him at number four. Brent Honeywell at number 5, Francis Martez at number 6. Those are the top 3 pitchers on this list. And I guess Kopech stands out so much because of the velocity, but it seems like he's really starting to control, command that velocity a little bit, right?
Yeah, he did. I mean, I did see one start. Like, he walked, if you throw out one start, and they obviously all count, he walked 2 guys in 20 and two-thirds innings, counting the Fall Stars game. And then there was one start where he wound up walking 6, 3 and two-thirds, although, interestingly enough, he didn't give up a run because he battled around the walks, and his catcher, Mitch Garver, threw out 3 base stealers. But you know, he and Honeywell were kind of 1 and 2, but I think the gap for me was a little bit more than the gap was between Bellinger and Jimenez. There just wasn't a starter in that league who had Kopech stuff. I mean, Martez was probably the closest, but I mean, I saw Kopech, I think, 3 or 4 times, and he usually averaged 98 miles an hour with his fastball. And there were times, you know, the secondary pitches, I mean, this is a guy who hasn't pitched a lot. I mean, he did have a suspension, and he did break a hand in an altercation, which, you know, obviously those aren't good. But so he hasn't pitched as much as a young guy his age normally would have anyway. But, you know, the slider at times was a swing-and-miss pitch. There were reports, I didn't see it as good in the starts I saw, but I think his first start of the year was pretty spectacular, and there were guys throwing a plus changeup on him there. He made strides with his control. You know, as I was saying about Torres, I mean, you know, the guys who are special players tend to write their own timetables. And, you know, would I think it's impossible that Michael Kopech could be in the big leagues by the end of next year? I don't, because if he gets a little bit more consistent with that control and command, the stuff is just very, very good.
The Red Sox are an organization, guys, that really, as far as front-end, top-of-the-rotation-type ace pitchers, I guess John Lester was the last one that really they developed. Is this guy really looking like he's going to be the next one, Jonathan, or are there still a lot of question marks?
I don't think there are a lot of question marks. You know, he's got to, you know, show continued maturity on and off the field, and he's got to command the baseball. And he did both of those things this fall. If he continues to do that, then the sky's the limit. I mean, the stuff is there. You know, those are the only question marks. Those were large question marks. I mean, I think he still needs to answer them long term. You know, again, this was a short amount of time. But if he's going to have a walk rate like that, and he's going to command the baseball overall like he did in the fall, then forget about it.
Yeah, and he's going to top triple digits consistently. Amazing stuff. All right, good stuff, guys. One more thing I wanted to touch on, and I know it's your favorite topic of all. Obviously, he's not on either of these lists as far as the top 25 prospects or the top 10 breakout performances, but Tim Tebow was still a huge storyline in the Arizona Fall League. We didn't know really what we'd see going in, or Jim, maybe you had an idea what you might see. But I'll start with you. What are your thoughts now on Tim Tebow after seeing him play consistently throughout the fall league? Even if he wasn't there all week long, he still got a lot of game time in the AFL.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't. I mean, for a guy who left to go be with the SEC Network, and I think my position on that has been stated a couple times on the podcast. I mean, he got, you know, as much playing time as a typical fall leaguer. I will say this. I kind of had two thoughts. One, I mean, I still don't think he's going to be a big league player unless it's because he's Tim Tebow and the Mets call him up, you know, just for that reason. I mean, he's very rough in the outfield, very rough on the base pass. And, you know, the power is the most impressive tool, the raw power is, and I just didn't see him get to it in games. You know, he just does not lift the ball. He does not barrel and lift the ball with any kind of consistency. I don't think he ever, I mean, he hit some doubles, but I don't think he ever really came close to hit one out of the park. That said, I will give Tebow credit. He's, all that, I know that wasn't a glowing scouting report, but he actually was better than I thought he'd be, and I will admit that. I thought, you know, I mean, this is a guy who hadn't played baseball in 11 years, and the Fall League is probably roughly equivalent, I would think, you know, to Double A. You know, the hitters are ahead of the pitchers, so maybe the pitching's like a little bit, you know, on average, maybe a little bit below Double A quality, but close enough. But I mean, you have guys who, you know, can throw. You know, there's a lot of relievers who come in and throw 95, and you're facing, you know, outside of the starter, a lot of guys are pitching one or two innings at a pop. So you're getting guys with their stuff at their best. They're pretty fresh. Their relievers are pitching every third day. Some of these guys have nasty breaking stuff. And for all that, Tebow, I thought, you know, he might swing and miss, you know, strike out in about half his plate appearances, and that wasn't the case. You know, he made reasonable contact, or a lot more contact than I thought he would. I mean, he did not have the worst strikeout rate in the league. wasn't particularly close to it, and he didn't chase a lot of pitches out of strike zone. Did he have trouble with good breaking balls? You know, especially if, you know, left on left. Yeah, but I mean, so do other guys. He wasn't. If guys were pitching fastballs, you know, 6 inches off the corner, he generally wasn't chasing. And the other thing that I'll give him credit for is he did make some adjustments. I still don't think we didn't see him get to his power, but for a guy who at the beginning of his fall stint, it seemed like all he did was strike out and then hit a bunch of ground balls to first base and an occasional ground ball to second base. He did start going the other way a lot more often, using the whole field instead of just trying to. But, you know, I even talked to him after his last game about how he was pulling the ball like almost exclusively early, and he said, "Well, I wasn't really pulling the ball so much as I was rolling over on it, and you know, it wasn't a good kind of pull." He did make that adjustment, and the last two games I saw him play. And again, I still don't think he's a big leaguer. I did see him get three hits, and all three hits were squared up, line drive, hard hits, legitimate singles, and he walked twice. So he was a lot better at the end of the season than he was at the beginning. So I will give him credit for, A, exceeding my expectations, B, you know, showing the ability to make adjustments, and C, showing some improvement at the plate during, you know, what is it, you know, 6 weeks is a relatively short time.
Jonathan, what's next in the Tim Tebow experiment?
I mean, I guess he'll, you know, he has an off season. You know, he takes what he learned from the fall league and what it's going to take to try to compete. And, you know, put the work in that way. I think he needs to continue to work on sort of his baseball athleticism, flexibility, things of that nature, as much as he can, and then get ready for spring training. And then the Mets will have to see what what they think he's ready for. Now, obviously, he's the clock is ticking, so presumably he'd have to start, you know, at some advanced level, Florida State League, and see what happens from there. It's really a wait and see kind of thing with that. But to me, that's what the approach is going to be. And then if he really struggles there, then I guess he's going to have a decision to make in terms of, you know, how long he wants to keep trying this.
Are you in the same general boat as Jim, Jonathan, or are you a little more optimistic, more down? Where do you lay?
I am in the same exact boat as Jim. I'll drive the boat if he needs a break.
Perfect. All right, guys, fantastic stuff as always. And hey, Thanksgiving coming up quickly. This is kind of the Thanksgiving edition of the Pipeline Podcast. You guys enjoy the holiday.
You too, Tim.
You too.
All right, this has been the Pipeline Podcast. For Jim Callison, Jonathan Mayo, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time.